Hello everyone, my name is Danny, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm so excited to be joining Modified Role for Season 2. I can't wait for you to meet Gilliana Rustall, the mildly antagonising elven rogue, with everything to prove. So, let's not keep you waiting any longer. I'm sure you're dying to hear all about her super exciting life. So, what are you waiting for? Let's go.
It is late morning, turning to early afternoon. The sun beats down on a warm summer day, piercing through the trees over the forest city of Theraseed. Our view pans across this great towering forest. Occasional breaks in the canopy show a city built into the trees of the forest itself. We follow along to the very edge of the forest and up a slight hill, atop which stands a mighty oak tree. This tree is ancient and huge, and built into it is a large manor house with sprawling grounds around it. As we get closer, we can hear the clanging of weapons, sword on shield, buckler on armour, and our view drifts down onto the training grounds next to the house, where a large, muscular, elven man, wearing heavy armour and a great sword in his hands, is facing off against a much smaller, more slight elven woman. Danny, what does Gilliana look like? It is
Gilliana is an elf. She has, like, pointed ears and long, dark curly hair that comes down to about her mid-back. She has like brown skin and green eyes, and she has like high cheekbones and really perfect eyebrows.
Excellent. You are in the middle of a training session with your eldest brother, Berrien the Third. As usual, he's not taking it easy on you. In fact, he steps forward at this point with the great sword and slams his shoulder into your body, sending you sprawling to the ground. Not for the first time this day either. These training sessions are not quite daily, but a fairly regular occurrence, either with him, one of your other brothers, your father or mother. And they've been a part of your life for as long as you can remember. You're a member of the Rushdall family. Your lineage is one of great demon fighters from the Demon Wars. Your grandfather, Berrien the First, made a name for himself and for the family by becoming a fantastic warrior, defender of the Primaterial Plane during the invasion of the demons from the Infernal Planes. And then alongside him, your father, Berrien the Second, stepped up. Throughout Theraseed and even beyond, your family is well known as phenomenal fighters. You don't know much about the war. It ended sometime before you were born. All you do know is that towards the end of the war, you lost both your grandfather, Berrien the First, and one of your brothers, Hertham. Because of that, your family have been exceptionally careful about you, wrapping you in cotton wool, wanting to be protective of you for fear of losing you as well. They wanted to make sure you were prepared for anything. Same as all of your brothers, you have spent most of your life in training. But being the youngest of six, and the only girl of the family, you were treated almost like a porcelain doll. Except, of course, when it comes to training, like today. In which case, you're often treated like a sack of straw and beaten. Your life has pretty much revolved around your family home, on the rare occasion travelling into Theraseed proper, but always, you know, with a member of the family there to escort you. You've never really been allowed out on your own. You're not sheltered, you've had a fantastic education, you've spent time with other noble families in and around Theraseed and in and around the city proper, but you've never really had time to explore by yourself. You have some wonderful memories with this family, but some very frustrating ones. What has been the hardest part of Giuliana's sort of growth, her from going from a young child up to her current age of 100 years old? What's been the most difficult part of her childhood in this house?
The most difficult part of her childhood is the lack of choice for anything she does in her life. She's desperate to just be able to go out and choose what she wants to eat for dinner, or choose where she wants to go today, and choose how she behaves and how she presents herself and who she goes with. But she's never been able to do that, and I think that's where most of her frustration comes from. It comes from the lack of choice and trust that she has from her family.
Conversely to that, what has been some of your fondest memories of growing up with your family?
I think the fondest memories that Giuliana has is just all of the laughs and the jokes and the genuine connection that she has with her family. Like, she completely adores her family, like all of them, even though she gets frustrated with them sometimes. Like, they have a rare bond that she's sure that no one else has with their family, because these are the people that she spends the most time with, and she's spent all her time at home and around at least one member of her family all time. So she has a fantastic bond with all of them.
With that said, having just been knocked to the ground by your eldest brother, he chuckles to himself, like, "Come on, little Gilly, you can do better than that." And he takes a stance ready, and leaning against a fence to the side, sort of half paying attention, sort of looking off into the distance, there's a sigh from your second eldest brother, Chirith. "Come on, Gilly, you know the stances by now. If you had been standing properly, your brother wouldn't have been able to knock you down."
"How many times do I have to tell you both, don't call me Gilly? If you have to shorten my name, call me Anna. You know that I've asked you multiple times. And I was doing it right. It's just, you know, Beren's playing unfair again. He definitely shoved me harder than what he should have. And he knows better. He knows I've been feeling very sensitive recently, okay?"
Beren starts to chuckle and Chirith rolls his eyes. "Your enemies aren't going to take it easy on you just because you're feeling a little sensitive. Take the stance correctly. The fighting style that's been drilled into you has been one that's sort of been developed by your family. Your family are fantastic warriors all, but each has their own sort of take on it. Beren the Third, for example, the brother you're facing currently, he goes all in on heavy weaponry, heavy armor. He's the only one of your brothers who could even properly wield a greatsword, and he does with gay abandon. He finds nothing more entertaining than swinging that thing around and just beating all hell out of anything he's going up against. Even sometimes when that's you. Although he obviously does hold himself back a little in that case. Chirith takes a little more after your father in terms of fighting styles, wielding a long sword and small shield at his side. Your brothers, the twins Fenris and Glinkas, are both well versed in wielding dual short swords. And Rhaegal, the youngest brother, but still older than you by about 100 years, is better served wielding daggers. But all tend to fight in a more upfront and physical fighting style. Over the years, having been training with these all of your brothers, even your father and mother, for so long, you've realised that you're never going to be better than them at what they do. They've been doing it for a lot longer than you have. So to get around this, you've started working on, you know, the only way you can think to get past them, moving around them, using your slight nature to your advantage, getting in between their attacks. This is still something you're developing. You haven't mastered this yet by any means, but you do occasionally catch your brothers by surprise. And this might be one instance where you try to do so. Could you make an attack roll for me?
A 9.
You get to your feet, you ready a short sword in one hand, dagger in the other, and your brother takes a stance with his great sword. You Your plan is to wait for him to swing. You'll slip inside his guard and place your blade against his armpit. This, in any, you know, in your training fights, would be a win for you, placing the blade against one of his arteries, an indication that the fight is over and you have bested him. Unfortunately, you're not quite prepared for his attack. Instead of coming in with a swing, he rushes you again, lowering his shoulder, hoping to put you off balance first. Unfortunately, this works. He knocks you back a step, follows up with a swing with the flat of the blade, which catches you across the midriff, and knocks you down again. How would Gilliana react?
She goes, bloody hell, Berrien, why are you such a brute? There's no need to be so rough with me all the time.
Look, little Gilly, you know I'm only rough when I need to be. It's part of your training. We have, you know, the people you fight or the creatures you fight aren't going to give you a second chance or apologize for hitting you too hard. And I will do my best not to leave a bruise, but you have to be ready for the worst. And Gilly, I am by no means the worst you'll have to face.
How would I know you weren't? You wouldn't be the worst for me to face when I never, ever get to leave this place. And then she would storm off.
Berrien rolls his eyes and wanders off with his great sword to clean it down. Cherith has barely been paying attention, doesn't even realise you've gone. Where would Gilliana head after training like this?
She'd probably head straight to her room because it's her sanctuary. It's the place that she gets. It's like the place where she has the most control. It's her room. She gets to make it whatever she wants to be. So that's where she would go.
What would you do in your downtime in your room? What's your way of relaxing?
This episode is brought to you by the Big Red Button Podcast.
Do you know what you'd do in a nuclear apocalypse?
Because we sure as quack don't.
See how our choices get us into trouble and back out again in this actual play podcast.
Big Red Button is for lovers of the Fallout franchise, choose your own adventures, and tabletop role-playing games rolled into one big audio drama.
Our band of stragglers is unraveling a mystery in the wasteland. And we're at the mercy of the roll of the dice.
So grab your Geiger counters, take your rat away, and subscribe to our new show, The Big Red Button.
I think reading books, because there's not a lot else that she could probably do on her own. It's a very solitary hobby to have, probably reading books, but not books that her family would want her to read, just the most ridiculous fictional novels ever about not even adventuring novels, just romance novels that are just pure trash. That's exactly what she'd be reading.
Ones with Fabio in the front with the long flowing hair and a
absolutely
white shirt that's only buttoned up at the last button.
Yeah, some guy in a pirate hat with his wind blowing, wind blowing his hair, and just exactly that.
As this is some form of rebellion, would you sort of hide these books, or you just leave them so that your family might see them, and as a way of irritating them, or is this something you would sort of keep hidden from them?
Oh, she would not hide it. Even she wouldn't even try and hide it. She would have them fully on display in on a bookshelf, ready for anybody to see. And hopefully it would annoy her parents and her family greatly.
Well, unfortunately, where you had last left your book, which, whether that was on your bed or on your desk, it's not there currently.
Oh, God, which one of them took it? And she'd immediately think it was Fenris or Glinkas that took it. That would be her first thought, that one of the twins had taken her book.
Would you rush to claim it back from them?
Yeah, absolutely. She'd stomp so loud down the corridor and the stairs and try and find them.
You reach a sort of main hallway in the ground floor of the house, and there, framing themselves perfectly by a window with the sunlight beaming through, you see your twin brothers, Fenris and Glinkas, one sort of holding the other around the waist, leaning him back, the other standing back as if there's a wind blowing through his hair with the book in one hand.
Dear, I cannot tell you how much this means to me, but I fear we cannot be together, for my ship sets sail at dawn.
And Glinkus throws his hands back, wailing, "No! No, my love, you must stay with me!" And they both look at you as you walk in and burst out laughing.
"Is this really the trash you're reading, dear Gilly?"
"Don't you dare call it trash! You don't understand! You don't understand! Fabio is... he's just... he's way more of a man than both of you will ever be," and she will grab the try and grab the book out of whoever's got it, whoever's
Fenris is holding it. He doesn't resist. He lets you take it, and as you react, they both just double over laughing.
And then she's going to slap them with it. She's going to hit them with the book.
They start crying out in faux fear. "No, stop!" And your twin brothers, unlike Beryon, who's built like a brick shit house, Cherith, who is not quite as slight as yourself, but definitely slighter than him, Fenris and Glinkus sort of like, they hit that sort of median between the two. They're what I would call like wiry muscled, you know, taut like a gymnast. And they could quite easily dodge away from your blows with the book, but they find this much more entertaining and they stand and take it. The only real way to tell the difference between the two is that one has a slight scar across his cheek. Other than that, the two are nigh on identical, something they've used to their advantage quite often in the past to irritate and confuse those around them. Because a little scar on the cheek is definitely something that could be hidden with a little bit of makeup. So especially those who have come to rely on that little feature to tell them apart soon find that it's not always that simple. The two, having had their laugh and wound you up successfully, wander off to find some other mischief to get up to. Book in hand, what would Giuliana do?
We should find a new spot now, because obviously nowhere's sacred in this house, so she's going to have to try and find somewhere else. So maybe she would probably head outside to the garden or where there's a bench outside to get some fresh air, because she's feeling frustrated. Somewhere outside.
You head outside and you find your family has quite a large estate with well-kept gardens, and there's a bench that looks down the hill towards the city. And sitting nearby, you see your youngest brother, Rhaegar, currently reading a book of his own. Would you approach him, or would you keep a distance from him to read your own novel?
I think seeing the opportunity to annoy one of her brothers, obviously, because it's fine when she does it to them, but never when they do it to her. She'd walk straight up to him and she'd go, brother, what a wonderful day. What fancy seeing you out here. What are you reading? And then she'd like poke him and she'd like nudge him and like ruffle his hair and just be as annoying. And then she'd try and take the book out of his hands and like swap it with the one that she has.
Rhaegal, used to your provocations, ignores you for a couple of seconds. You can see he's intently reading what's in front of him. You attempt to take the book from his hand and he grips it quite tightly. He's not trying to tear it away from you or dodge it away, but he grips it quite tightly. So why don't we both do a strength contest?
Oh no. Ooh. Well, that's a zero from me.
Well, that's unfortunate, because that was a nat 20 for me.
I got a natural one and I'm in minus one.
I'm not even going to make up a modifier for him because it doesn't matter. You attempt to pull the book away. There's not even a twitch in his muscles, but the book does not move. You continue to poke and prod him and speak to him, and he very slowly lifts a bookmark from his lap, places it on the page he was reading, closes the book, sighs and says, "Gilly, I was reading one of the histories of the lead up to the Demon War and what some of the theories and how they managed to break into the Prime Material plane." He raises an eyebrow at the book you're reading and he says, "I can see you're reading something just as educational."
Yeah, and I'm not being funny, Rhaegal, but what you just said was really boring.
He just nods.
if you want to make more friends, then maybe you should read something else. I was just trying to do you a favour. I was trying to introduce you to something that people do, and it's called fun. Maybe you should try it.
He looks at the cover of the book you're holding, tilting his head so he can read it. "The Sigh of the Sea Breeze. Tell you what, Gilly, I will add it to my list. If you," and he holds up, "Theories on the lead up to the Demon War, how did the invasion begin? If you will promise to read this."
Ugh, really?
He just nods.
Since you asked so nicely, and obviously I've been trying to beg you to start book club for years, I will read it, but just for you.
Because you're my favorite.
He smiles at that. I will tell you once I have returned it to the library.
Okay. And then she'll get up and leave him alone and try and find a different bench to sit on or go somewhere new.
Yeah, there'll be a couple of benches nearby. Once you've gone, he takes the bookmark out and continues reading. And you both, you know, you're not sitting too far away from one another. You sit in quite comfortable, companionable silence. The day ticks onward, the sun sort of heading down lower. Obviously, this being a summer day, it's going to remain light for quite some time. At one point, you look up from your book, just, you know, looking beyond the estate and further down towards the city. You can make note of people, you know, carrying poles or wagons being moved into the town, and you think about it and realize that it must be coming close to the harvest festival time, when the city celebrates the completion of the summer's harvest and a party is held over the course of several nights. You've of course been before, but always in the accompaniment of a member of your family. What does Giuliana think as she sees people preparing for this festival?
She'll definitely be sat there, like, longingly looking at the people are out, and even like being like slightly jealous that they have like jobs that they can just go and like they get to set up a festival and get everyone excited. And she's thinking that she wished that she could go and just enjoy herself, but like not with her brothers and not with her parents, and just, yeah, try and find herself. But she's not very hopeful about that.
You've obviously approached your mother and father and even your brothers. You've tried enlisting their help with this before, but you know, you've asked many a times to be allowed to venture out on your own, even just into the city. This has always been shot down with varying degrees of severity. Even from your father, who has a bit of a soft spot for you, you've learned, compared to your other siblings, even he could not be swayed on this. But you have just turned 100 years old. And this is getting old very quickly. You might still not be a full-fledged adult in terms of elven years, but you certainly feel mature enough and well-trained enough to look after yourself, even just in the city, of all places. Would Giuliana try to persuade her parents again, or has she given up on, you know, trying to argue them into letting them go?
I think she's a fighter, so her parents have always brought her up to be a fighter, so she would absolutely try her best one more time. It's now or never. Yeah, she would go and find her parents and ask them again if she could go to the festival on her own.
You head inside looking for your parents. You find both of them in the study. You see your father sat in an armchair reading a book. This one doesn't have a cover. It appears to be some sort of journal. He is an imposing man. Not overly tall for an elf, but, you know, getting there. Muscular, but not overly so, with a stature that belays his ability in combat. He moves with poise and balance that only those with years of training can achieve. And while his features are severe and stern, there's always a subtle warmth when he sees you. An upturning of the lips, a softening around the eyes that not even your brothers are privy to. Away from him, sitting at a harpsichord, is your mother, playing something gentle and soft while your father reads. Your mother, much like your father, is a severe woman, powerful in her own right, and I think it's safe to say your greatest hero. Your father wouldn't have married a weak woman. In fact, she could give your father a run for his money in combat herself. She fought alongside him in the Demon War and defended your family and home during the invasion of the demons. Unlike your father, she shows no more warmth to you than she would your brothers. There is definitely, you know, she has not been cruel. She has always been loving and nurturing, but she has also brooked no weakness. She would not allow you to cry off from something because you were tired or it hurt or you weren't enjoying it. If she believed it was for your best interest, she would have you go at it as hard as possible. And she would not give you sympathy should you fail. She would just set you back up, explain why you didn't succeed, and encourage you, or sometimes more than encourage you, to try again until you did succeed. A harsh woman, but were it not for her, you certainly wouldn't be who you are today. When you step into the room, she sees you, nods, but continues to play. Your father waits till you approach, places a finger in his book, closes it and sets it on his lap. He looks up to you and smiles. Ah, little Gilly, how was your training with Berrien today?
It was okay. I got in a few good hits, but so did he. But I did just start reading this really interesting book about the war. I'm really, really taking my studying
roll
seriously.
Deception. Roll deception.
Fantastic. That is a 15.
Okay, you're rolling the side against that. Okay, yeah, he looks slightly shocked. And he nods and says, excellent, I'm glad to see you're taking your studies seriously.
You know me, Dad, I always take everything seriously.
There's a very slight smirk at that.
And then she'd probably turn to where her mother's sitting and she'd go, Mother, that song is just so, so beautiful. You'll have to teach me how to play it. I've been thinking about taking up an instrument, and I feel very inspired by today's performance.
She plays the last lilting keys of the song, folds her hand in her lap, looks at you and said, Juliana, what do you want from us? And smiles very slightly, knowing full well that you're attempting to butter her up.
Oh, well, now you ask. Yeah, I did actually come in here to ask you something, actually. Now, I was wondering, you know, since obviously I understand, like, in previous years, like, obviously I've not been, like, ready to go out on my own and, like, to the festival. It happens every year, and I just thought now, because obviously I'm 100 years old now, it's a milestone birthday, I just thought that maybe
your mother grabs the cover for the keys on the harpsichord and lowers it. She doesn't slam it, but there is a fairly loud click as it sets with a finality that stops you in your tracks. She once again folds her hands on her laps, looks you dead in the eyes, and says, you know our stance on this, Giliana. The answer will be no. You look from her to your father, and his smile when you were telling him about your studies has dropped slightly. He doesn't look angry, he just looks sad. And he says, you know I agree with your mother, Giliana. We cannot risk something happening to you as well. The answer is no. We will decide when you are ready.
But nothing ever happens here. Why would anything happen tonight? And why can't
he
I just
He stands
go?
Up in front of you. Your father has never struck you as a punishment. He's never been physical with you or anything, but he is an imposing figure. When he towers over you close at this distance, you understand why people respect him, why some people fear him. There's no anger in his voice, just a sad sense of finality. The answer is no, Giliana. Please do not make me say it again.
Okay. And then she'll just walk out of the study.
Would you cast a look back at your parents, or would you leave without looking at them?
I don't think that she would look back.
It's fine. You leave. I take it at sort of this point, would you head back to your room?
Yeah.
Okay. You spend a bit of time there. you know, the events of the evening running through your head. This isn't the first time you've had this conversation. It still stings every time, though. The fact that you're not trusted to go out on your own. You stew on this for a while. Dinner is served. Your brothers attempt their normal ribbing and winding you up, but very quickly they can tell there has been another, air quotes, conversation by the look on your parents' face and also your own. The ribbing dies down, dinner is finished politely, and as you head back to your room, the sun is setting. From your window, you can just about make out the edge of the city where it meets the tree line. What's Giuliana thinking?
Giuliana's thinking about how frustrated she is by her parents' lack of trust in her. And she's really thinking about that trust. She's going, why don't they trust me? I've never given them a reason not to trust me. I've always tried my best and I never break the rules. And if I do, it's something silly. Like, it's just a prank and it's no worse than what the boys do. And she's really going to be focused on the trust and how she thinks that she's being really hard done by. And I think it's going to build up and she's going to go, you know what? If they don't want to trust me, I better give them a reason to not trust me. And then she's going to go, fine, and climb out of the window and go to that festival because that's what she wants to do.
Excellent. Obviously, you've been into the town before. Your family aren't celebrities, but you are well known. Do you do anything before heading out to sort of hide your identity?
She'll grab her. She has a black cloak. She'll just try and make herself look inconspicuous, like nothing grand, no jewellery, which is, that's a lot for Giuliana. She loves wearing jewellery, so she'll take all of her jewellery off. She'll put a black cloak on and like a scarf thing that goes around her neck so she can like cover her face and her hair with the hood on the cloak, and then she'll climb out of the window.
Okay, as you head out the window, obviously your house is built into a tree. A tree is not a particularly difficult thing to climb, especially for someone who has been exercising and training pretty much every day. So just give me a straight up athletics check to scramble down.
15.
Okay, you make it down, absolutely no problem. You climb past a couple of other windows. When you get to the bottom floor, obviously there are other people around, so as you make your way away from the house, give me a stealth check.
Mm-hmm. Natural 20 with a plus 7, so 27.
Flip. Good grief. So you start to realize that using aspects of your training that you've been trying to develop, sort of moving your weight a certain way or shifting into a certain position, you're able to move damn near silently. You slip from shadow to shadow out of sight of the lights, ensuring that absolutely nobody can see you. You get well clear of your family's estate and not a soul is wiser to your presence. You walk down the road that leads from the estate in towards the city. And the closer you get, the more people you run into on the road, people heading in for the festival. Families bringing their children, couples, the odd single traveller on their own heading in. Some are carrying lanterns to light the way. Others are bringing food and drink to have at the festival or to sell. And the longer you're on the road, the more people you run into. Until finally, at the edge of the forest and the edge of the city itself, you walk into the edge of the festival. Lanterns are festooned from tree to tree, hanging over the streets. The sounds of laughter and music fill the air, as do the smell of the food and drink from all the stalls. The handful of taverns and pubs in the city stand with their doors and windows open. Raucous laughter and sounds of friendly fighting and shouting can be heard drifting out of the doors and windows, and the occasional drunken reveller comes drifting out through the doors as well. The city is full of people, the streets are thronged. The sounds of fiddles, and drums and guitars fills the air. What would Giuliana do with her first night of true freedom?
She would just, I think first of all, she would just stand and look at everything just in complete awe. And she'd seen it before because she wasn't like a prisoner in her own home, but like it would feel like so different to her, like not having to go where everybody else wanted to go. She gets to pick where she gets to go for like for the first time, and she'd just be so excited. And I think she would just try and experience as much as possible, like go to all of the stalls and try different foods and drinks and all sorts.
You approach an elderly elven man with a stall on the side of the road. There seems to be some form of almost like steam or mist building up from the inside of his stall. When you approach, you can see he's selling little cups filled with what looks to be shaved ice with some form of syrup sprayed on top of it. You've obviously tried these before. Like I say, you've been to these fests before. You know what this is. It's a local delicacy. Especially now at this time of year when ice is pretty hard to come by, you know this has either had to have been sourced from somewhere very specific or created with magic. So, not the sort of everyday thing that you're going to have at home, but a nice treat at a festival like this. As you approach, the man smiles warmly and says, "Evening, miss. Can I interest you in a shaved ice?"
"I would absolutely love one, sir. Thank you so much."
He nods, hands you a little bowl with some shaved ice in it, winks and said, "First one's on the house."
"That is so kind. Thank you so much." She's going to take it and try it.
I mean, you can tell me whether you like it or not. It's a little shaved ice with some syrup in it. Is that sort of thing Giuliana would be into? Something quite simple like that?
I mean, I think she would like it, but she'd probably be more happy with the fact that she didn't have to pay for it.
As you're sort of looking around wide-eyed, enjoying your shaved ice, and I could have called it literally anything, but I'm just stuck with shaved ice. As you're looking around wide-eyed, the little man on the stall tilts his head and says, "Is this your first time at the festival?"
"Yeah. Yes, it is."
"Oh, well then, welcome, my dear. What was your name again?"
"My name is Kaylee. Nice to meet you."
"It's a pleasure. My name is Lorik."
"Lovely to meet you, Lorik."
"Well, if this is your first time at the Harvest Festival, I hope you enjoy it. It's a wonderful event."
"Well, I'm sure I will, and you've just made my night. So thank you very much, sir."
He smiles warmly, like, taps his hand on top of yours and just smiles and continues on with his night. You work your way through the festival. You try different foods, you head into the different bars buying drinks, and you have a fantastic night. You dance with strangers, you sing songs you barely know the words to, and you wobble home in the early hours of the morning. As you get back to the house, you sneak back. With a little bit more difficulty than sneaking out, you manage to sneak back in. It's fairly early in the morning, so even if someone did discover, you could claim you were just out early. As you make it back into your bed, what does Giuliana think?
I think her head would just be reeling. Like, she would not be able to wipe the smile off her face. She'd just be ecstatic and, like grinning to herself and just absolutely completely chuffed with the fact that she'd broken out and she hadn't been caught and she just had the best time ever.
You make the decision then that this is going to be part of your life. This isn't a one-time thing. You're going to make sure that this happens again and happens regularly. And you manage to do so. Over the course of the next weeks, months, years, you make it your goal to escape from the house regularly. You spend your days training with your family, your nights out, learning more about the city than you ever did before. You meet people from all walks of life. You get to know the barkeepers in the taverns, the butchers, the food sellers, and you spend your time making friends in the city. one such night, several years after your first foray into the city, you have a particularly heavy night in one of the taverns with several of the locals that you've come to know. This is probably the worst you've ever been in terms of drunkenness. You're struggling to stand. You stumble out of the bar thinking you have to get home. You're not even 100% sure what direction that is at the minute, and you're walking very unsteadily down the street when you feel a pair of hands on your shoulders and say, whoa. You'll never make it home like that. They gently guide you to a nearby bench, walk over to a nearby well, pick up a jug and start filling it. They walk back over and set it in front of you. Drink this, and, well, we'll see where we go from there. What would Giuliana do?
Giuliana would just go, what is it? Just, like, the most drunk person request ever. Like, what are you trying to give to me? I don't know you. Why should I drink this?
Because it's your best way of getting hope.
How do I know that you're not lying to me?
He tilts his head to the side. I suppose you don't. I could just leave you here.
I mean, I was doing fine on my own before.
He smiles. I know for a fact that your home is that way, and he points one way down the street. And you were walking that way, and he points the opposite way down the street.
Her head just follows where he's pointing, and she's just go, how do you know where I live? You don't know me.
I've seen you here a few times before.
Are you following me?
No, we just happen to leave the bar at the same time sometimes.
I don't trust you. And she's going to get up and like walk in the completely wrong direction.
He gently again guides you back to your bench. Look, I won't take you home, but I have a sneaking suspicion there are some people who may ask some questions if you turn up in this state. I'm not letting you leave until you drink this, and then I will go my own way, and you can make your own way home from there. And he places the jug of water in your hands.
I still don't trust you, and she'll drink the water out of the bucket.
When you're nearly, well, it's a little jug, I wouldn't say it's a bucket.
Okay.
But when you get near the bottom, roll a perception check.
Oh dear. Natural 20.
Fair enough. You are drinking from the jug. You see this elven man head back over to the well. He fills up a bucket with water, walks back over. He waits until you're finished. And he says, feeling better?
I guess.
He dumps the bucket of water on you. How about now?
How dare you?
That's more like it. He sets the bucket down by the well, waves, and walks off by himself into the night, leaving you much more sober.
She's gonna blow her hair out of her face and just like wipe as much water off her face as possible. And she'll be absolutely she'd be so mad that even if she was a slight bit drunk, she wouldn't be drunk anymore because she'd be that mad. And she'd walk home.
You obviously remember that night quite clearly. Well, at least the end of the night, you remember quite clearly for some time. You don't see that elf again for a couple of months until one night, one of your new hobbies is frequenting the bars who hold fighting competitions. Something obviously you have been well trained for thanks to your brothers. People often underestimate you, being not only a girl, but also a fairly young one at that in terms of elven years. For this reason, you've been doing quite well. Obviously, the money doesn't really mean much to you, but the sense of satisfaction you get beating down people much larger or older than you is something that you've been reveling in. On this one particular night, you're feeling quite cocky. You've just taken down some half-orc whose name you vaguely remember as being Zabag or Xander or something beginning with a Z. And the sort of organizer/referee for the fight is calling on any competitors who would like to take you on. At which point, leaping over the barrier to the makeshift ring is the man you saw on that fateful night, the one who threw the water in your face. As he stands before you, you look him up and down. You take in the features you couldn't quite remember from that night, other than a vague recollection of his features. He's tall, with tan skin, long blonde white hair, and, in your own opinion, some pretty fantastic muscle definition. And he smiles and waves, and gets himself ready for a fight. What's going through Giuliano's head?
Giuliano's thinking, this guy, I can't wait to give him a piece of his own medicine. And she's going to turn around and she's going to point at him and go, you're... she's not going to know what to say because she doesn't know what to say because she's, like, never been... had water thrown in her face before. And she's just going to put her fists up and she's going to go... And she's going to, like, beckon with her hand.
Okay. So, like, let's go. He steps up. The referee begins the match. He steps up towards you and the referee beckons you in close. Stands back, raises his hand and drops it. Give me a, let's say, straight up athletics check. Actually, I'll let you do athletics or acrobatics, depending on how you think you would react in this fight, if you're going to head strong and try to beat him down, or if you're going to try and move around him.
Oh, well. It's a 10.
Okay, it's not bad, you know, considering most of the people you're fighting are just your average person who comes out to have a few drinks and see what they can do. That would have done quite well. Again, you're pretty sure the way you've moved would have immediately shut down most of the people you fought tonight. Unfortunately, this elf in front of you moves with a grace that for some reason reminds you of your brother's. As you step in towards him, fist raised, he slips one leg behind your knee, one arm across your body, lightly touches you on the shoulder farthest from him, and his body just turns and he puts you flat on your back, kneels down with his knee on your chest and holds a fist above your head. Looks at you with one eyebrow raised and says, Yeem?
Never. You're going to try and push him off.
Okay, make a strength check.
Dear God.
I mean, I rolled quite badly, so.
Oh, 17?
He thought this was going to be a bit of fun. He wasn't expecting you to take this quite so seriously. He's not putting his full weight on you. In fact, he's barely putting any weight on you at all. You're able to push him back, catch him off balance, and put him back onto his feet. You stand up, and you continue the fight. Unfortunately, it continues much like it began. He doesn't seem to be taking this particularly seriously at all, but any time you engage with him, after one or two attempts at landing a strike, he twists or moves in a way that turns and puts you on your ass again. How long would Giuliana put up with this?
I mean, she's pretty used to it. But she does have a good, I don't know, she has a reputation in this tavern, so she wouldn't want to give people the wrong idea. Not long, 10 minutes max. She's used to, like, getting her ass kicked for, like, hours, so, like, 10 minutes is, like, nothing.
Okay, so what would you do after 10 minutes? Would you just, like, throw your hands up and give up, or yell at him, or what would you do?
She would go, okay, I get it. You're trying to teach me another lesson. Man that I've met one time and has thrown water in my face. Fine, I understand. I've had enough. And then she'll get up. She'll jump out of the ring or the pit.
You jump out of the ring, and do you just like leave the establishment, or do you go to the bar, or what would you do?
She'll go to the bar and she'll get a drink.
He follows soon after. He doesn't want to stick around and fight anybody else, and he follows you to the bar, and he offers to pay for the ride, and he says, "I'm sorry. I really wasn't trying to sort of teach you any lesson. I was just having a bit of fun, and I guess I probably took it a little bit too far."
Yeah, you can pay for my drink. I want to say no to free drinks. And, I mean, yeah, it kind of felt like you were trying to teach me a lesson, and you just, you know, you've reminded me of some of the people that try and teach me lessons all the time, so forgive me if I lost my temper.
No, really, I didn't intend for it to be a lesson. I thought it was a bit of fun, but you're welcome for the other night. I'm not 100% sure you would have made it back. Well, you probably would have made it to somebody's home, but probably not your own. You don't remember me, do you?
I remember you from the other night. Am I meant to remember you?
He sort of smiles sadly. I'm Sarul. Sarul Juriath. You know this name. The Juriath family are another noble family, sort of like your own. They were another formidable force in the Demon War. And Sarul, in particular, was the closest friend of your brother, Herthum. These two were inseparable when they were younger, and even as they grew, they were the best of friends. Sarul was there when your brother died. You know this because your family blame not just themselves for not preparing Herthum well enough for the war, but they blame the Juriath family and Sarul in particular for not doing enough to protect him. What does Gileana think when she looks at Sarul now, knowing this about him?
I think she would be shocked that he would even try and talk to her. Like, from what she knows, she's not meant to talk to them because his family betrayed her family. So she'd probably like reel at the fact that she'd heard this name, and she'd say, I mean, we definitely should not be having this conversation. You shouldn't even be near me right now. Wait, why are you even talking to me? I didn't think you even cared about my family. Why are you even trying to look after me?
When you say that part about, you know, that you didn't care about the family, why you're looking after me, he looks heartbroken. You look just like your brother. I saw you in one of the bars one night. I didn't approach, because I knew, obviously, with the history between our families, you probably wouldn't want to speak to me. But obviously, on the one night, I did notice that you became a little more inebriated than I imagined you were planning to, and I couldn't leave you alone to wander into the night. You remind me of him.
Of Perthum.
He smiles. Yes. I know you would have been told something about what happened, but I can assure you of one thing. I loved your brother dearly. Your family weren't the only ones heartbroken at his loss.
It's weird hearing anybody talk about him. No one talks about him at home.
I'm not surprised. So I've known your family for almost as long as I can remember. I imagine, well, I know for a fact they didn't take Perthum's loss well. Well, nobody would take the loss of a son and a brother well, but I know your parents blamed themselves, your brothers too. And there hasn't been a day gone by that I haven't thought about what I could have done differently to bring him back home. I don't blame them for hating me. I only wish they would have told you more about him.
Well, I sometimes think that they're trying to replace him with me. So they probably just don't want to give me the wrong impression. But I mean, it's sort of nice just having a normal conversation about the whole situation, because I never get to hear anything about it. I mean, I barely remember anything to do with him, let alone what happened. On we certainly don't. It's definitely not something that we talk about at the dinner table. So I'm not sure what to believe.
He nods sadly, takes a swig from his drink and says, well, if you don't mind the company for tonight, maybe I could tell you more about him.
I would really like that. I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
He nods, and you spend the rest of the night in the bar with Cerule, and he tells you stories about your brother. He tells you about growing up with him. He tells you about how your mannerisms and your confidence remind him of him. He tells you of the good times and the bad times, and you talk till well into the morning. Which, of course, that means you have to rush home, but not before you arrange to meet again in a week's time. And you continue like this for months. It used to be when you snuck out, you would do something different every time, go to a different place, meet different people, but now it seems that every time you go out, you meet up with Cyril. You still go out and do different things, you attend the fights together, you go drinking, you play games, but at least initially, a lot of this is him regaling you with stories of your brother. And over time, you feel almost like you can remember him better again. His words paint a picture of a brother you thought lost to your most faded memories, now painted in vivid colours again with the stories he paints. How does this affect... Well, how does this make Giuliana feel towards him? Obviously, this goes on for months, maybe even a year or two. Over time, how does Giuliana's feelings towards Cyril change?
I think that her feelings... She would just... I think the fact that he would be treating her like a normal person, like, just... He's literally just giving her everything that she's ever dreamt of having. So she'd be absolutely enamoured with him, like, completely... Completely obsessed, he was her first friend, like, that she got to choose, and, like, she's just decided to take on this new rebellious, like characteristic that she's never taken on before, and he's definitely a part of that. He's just absolutely the complete opposite to her home life, and she'd just be completely enamored. Obsessed. She just loved everything about him.
As well as stories about Perthum, Cyril tells you stories about himself. He has travelled, not all over the continent, but farther than you, certainly. He's been to places you've only ever read about, done things you could only dream of doing. On top of your already rebellious nature that you've been fomenting, this adds a wanderlust to your nature, a drive and desire to travel, to go other places and see new things that you've not been allowed to see. When you think about things like that, do you think about doing them alone, or when you picture these things, is Cyril there with you?
Anna's never thought about doing things, anything on her own. I think she's grown up around all of her brothers and her family, and she loves them, and she doesn't like being solitary. She likes being with her family and having a big family, so she knows that her family would never let her do anything like this, so she would absolutely be imagining running away and having an adventure with Cyril. Absolutely.
This sort of idea sits in the back of your mind, it grows, you feed it until eventually you make the decision, like, this isn't something you wish to do, this is something you're going to do. But before you can broach that idea with, well, Cyril or anyone else, you have to consider what Cyril is to you. After thinking about this for some time, what conclusion does Giuliana reach?
I think she'd be thinking that she just has to rip off the... She'd be worried, of course, like, slightly nervous, but she's confident. She'd be like, I'm gonna have to go, she's gonna tell him how I feel, because she's bored of being in Bereseed, and she wants to see more, and she wants him with her, so she'd be like trying to encourage herself to tell him how she feels and just decide, you know what, it's now or never, and go and tell him how she felt.
Well, you meet up for one of your arranged evenings together. You're in the bar, maybe takes a few drinks, but a Dutch, well, I don't know, goblin courage, whatever they would call it here, to bring yourself to say it. What is it you tell him?
I think she would neck back her drink and like take a massive deep breath. She'd go, Cyril, I wanted to talk to you about something.
Yeah, by all means.
We've been friends for a while now, and you've taught me so much. You've told me all about my brother, and I'm so thankful for you doing that. And you've told me all about the adventures that you've had and the places that you've seen and the people that you've met. And it's I want that. I want to see everything that the world has to offer. I want to go places I've never been before. I'm sick of being in Theraseed, and I want to leave and just live my best life, live the life that I've never gotten to live the last 100 years that I've been longing for. But you're the one that has given me this confidence to do that, and I care a lot about you, and feel very fondly for you, and I would love if you could accompany me on this adventure, and you know, just come with me and see everything and teach me even more, and just take me away from here and everything here, and have an adventure with me.
As you're, you know, opening your heart up to him, saying all of this, at the beginning he's sort of nodding and smiling. He's like, you know, you can see he agrees. Like, yeah, you're getting out and doing your own thing, it's just not a bad idea. He, you know, after all your conversations that you've had, you know that he's on your side. He doesn't think that you being sheltered is the best idea. But then when you start talking about him being the one to go on the adventure with you and how much you care for him, his brow furrows. And when you get to the end, he shakes his head, he chuckles softly. And for some reason that hurts. He's not, you know, he didn't like laugh at you, but there's something in his reaction. Roll an insight check.
17.
Initially, when he chuckles, you think your immediate reaction is, you know, he's condescending me. But then you see past it and you see there's a sadness there too as well. He doesn't mean to hurt you. He's not doing this to be mean. These are his genuine feelings when he says to you, Anna, no, not like that. You're like a sister to me. I couldn't.
So Anna says, I'm like a sister. A sister to you.
Yes.
But what? Why would you think that I would want another brother? I already have 6 of those at home, and you're saying that that's all you want to be? You want to be like a brother to me? If I wanted that, I would have stayed at home. But I didn't. I thought you were my friend. I don't need anybody else looking over my shoulder and looking after me and keeping me sheltered and treating me like a child. I don't need that. I definitely don't need that from you. I already have that at home. So why don't you leave me alone and let me live my life? And she's going to walk, just turn and walk away.
As you're saying that, you can see he's doing what I was doing, opening his mouth, trying to like kind of get a word in, trying to say something, And as you get up to leave, he's like, and you can, he looks around, you can tell he was about to say your name, and he says, Kaylee, wait. Do you wait for him, or do you just walk away?
She turns around and goes, what? What do you have to say?
He looks at you sadly, and he says, no matter anything else, know that I am your friend. But I think you may have wanted more than that, and I would not be able to give you that.
She doesn't say anything else, and she just turns and walks away.
He doesn't chase you. You don't hear him running after you, calling your name. You leave the bar, and the door closes behind you. You take a second, catch your breath, and you begin walking home. At what point does Giuliana decide that this is the night she's going to leave? Was it during the conversation with Cyril? Was it when she left the bar, when she walked home? Was it when she got into bed that night? At what point was the decision made?
I think she made the decision to leave before she even met Cyril. I think she knew that it was now, and she's devastated the fact that he didn't want to come with her. I think more the fact that she doesn't understand why he would want to stay here and not go with her. I know that she knows that he's seen a lot more than she has, but still, like, she's been shackled to this place all her life, so she just doesn't understand it. So she'd be even more, like, pushed to prove that she could live a way better life away from here, and that she'd have to go now because she'd already hyped herself up to leave. She just thought that she would have some support, but she's I think that the anger and the embarrassment and the upset would push her to just pack everything up and leave.
You get back to your room. You sneak in as normal. You begin pulling together a pack. Some spare clothes, some bits of armor, maybe one of your training swords. And you get yourself prepared. When the sun rises that morning and your family would meet for breakfast, you walk into the dining hall. They're all already there, talking, eating, enjoying their breakfast, and you walk in wearing travelling clothes with a bag over your back. The conversation stops dead. They look at you. You look around the table, meeting them eye to eye. Rhaegal looks sad, but nods. Fenris and Glinkas shoot looks to one another, and both seem to be suppressing something to say. Cherith looks like he could not care less. But before anyone else can react, Beryon, your brother, stands upright and slams his hands into the table. He looks like he's about to say something when your mother raises a hand, and he holds himself back. Your father slowly pushes his chair out and stands up. He looks you in the eye and says, what are you planning, Giuliana?
I'm not planning anything. I just want to go and see where it takes me. I want to prove that I can take on any challenge that comes my way. And you've always taught me that I'm not going to expect anything, so how can I have a plan when I don't know what to expect?
Your father was very, you know, he was holding his emotions in check. But whenever you start talking about having no plan whatsoever, he appears to look very, very angry. You know the reason we've kept you here is that we're worried for you, for all of you, and he sweeps his arm down the table indicating your brothers. We have told you that we would determine when it was safe for you to head out on your own. And you plan to leave now with no further consideration to what might happen, where you might go, what you might do. His voice rises slightly. He catches himself, closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. Opens them again and says, would you really do this to us? Have us at home, worried for you every night, wondering when you might return.
Father, you said that you and Mother and the boys would decide when it was time for me to leave, but that is not your decision to make. It should never have been your decision to make. It always should have been mine. I don't know how you expect me to have a plan for what's out there when you've never given me a chance to experience or expect anything. I have no idea what to expect, but that isn't my fault. That's because of you and everyone here. I can't be blamed for being curious and wanting to live my life. And you say you should not be sat here worrying about me. But what have I done my whole life? I've been stuck here, sat here, worrying about you leaving and never coming back. So it's okay for me to do, but it's not okay for you to do for me. I'm asking you one more time and begging you to trust me to leave and come back, because I will, and I will come back a better and stronger person than before, I promise.
He steps away from the table towards you. He stands an arm's length away. You may leave, Giuliana, but know that we will never forgive you for the pain it will cause us. The softness that normally sits around his eyes isn't there. He looks at you, a hard, stern, unfeeling man, his emotions in check. You can tell he's doing his best not to belay how he truly feels, the anger, the sadness. But he stands there before you. What does Giuliana do?
I think at this point she's just holding back tears. But she knows better than to cry in front of her family. Like, she's always been taught that crying's not an option. It's especially not in front of people. So she'll look at her brothers and she'll tilt her head at them one last time and give them a small smile and look at her father, and she'll walk up to him and she'll give him the tightest hug ever, but not expect anything back. And
he doesn't hug you back, but you can feel when your arms are around him the shuddering in his breath. You can tell he's doing his best as well not to shed a tear. When you pull back, you can see a mistiness in his eyes, belaying the stern set of his jaw.
She would, I think the tears would probably have fallen at this point, and she'd just angrily try and swipe them away. And turn around and just walk away, because I think if she looked back then she would just completely lose her composure.
As you turn your back on the table, your brothers, who had been waiting, erupt. Beryon the Third is yelling, begging you to stay and not to leave. Fenris and Glinkas are alternately yelling at each other, yelling at you, yelling at their other, you know, your other brothers, telling them, kept asking them to stop you. Rhaegal is trying to calm Fenris and Glinkas. Cherith is likewise he's placed a hand on Beryon's arm, trying to stop him from pulling away from the table. You go through the doors and the sound is muffled. When you're nearly at the front door, you hear footsteps on the hallway behind you. And you turn around to see your mother, who had remained silent throughout the entire exchange in the dining hall. She steps towards you with a wrapped bundle. She approaches you, and without saying a word, holds her two hands out with the bundle between them towards you. What do you do?
She reach hands out and tentatively take the bundle from her mother.
You pull back the top of the bundle, and inside are a sword and a dagger, neither of which are, you know, particularly eccentric. There's no excessive gilding to them. They are just finely made weapons, but the ones crafted for your family. And nestled between the two is a brooch with the symbol of your house emblazoned on it. A bunch of white iron herb flowers. You know your family's history. Through the wars with the demons, your family would go into battle wearing bunches of white iron herb. It was said to fend off evil spirits and protect those who wore it. As you take this bundle from your mother, she looks down on you and says, "Make us proud, or do not return." She reaches up, places a hand on the side of your cheek. Using her thumb, wipes away a streak from one of your tears, nods, turns, and walks back into the house. What does Giuliana do?
I think she looks down at the weapons that her mother just gave her and looks at the brooch that was wrapped in the package as well, and considers it for a few moments, just shocked that of all of her family members, her mother was the one that has been most supportive with her decision, because this is definitely not how she expected today to go. And she'd think about her brother Perthum and how she was kind of sick of living in the shadow, and take the brooch, and she'd pin it to her chest and take a deep breath and put her weapons in her holsters, and she'd grab her bag and she'd leave her childhood home.
Giuliana walks away from her home. You don't head into Therese this time, but take one of the roads leading away. And you set off on a journey that you're not sure, well, where you're going or where it's going to end. You travel for the day and make camp a little ways away from the road that night in a thicket of trees. You settle down and fall into a fitful sleep. Can you pick a number between 1 and 20?
16.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 16. Okay. You fall into a fitful sleep. In this sleep, you begin to dream. You find yourself standing in darkness. The ground around you seems to be flat with a thin layer of water on top, and as you move or step, ripples emanate outward. After a few moments, you'll occasionally see the ripples connect with something in the distance, and then that will create another ripple. And then another thing in the distance, and that will create a ripple. And the space around you slowly begins to lighten as these points where the ripples are reaching and hitting and refracting from begin to glow. And you see standing at each of these points is a person. You see your brothers, Marion the Third, Chirrut, Benris and Glinkus, Rhaegal, and the ripples emanating from you hit them and bound off hitting the next one and the next one and creating these patterns on the floor around you. Off to one side, you see your father and your mother, and your ripples reach them and they light up. You turn around and you spot Cerule. Your ripples reach him and rebound and redouble and grow larger. And then slowly, each of them begins to fade and the ripples die away until there are no more reflections, just a single ripple emanating from you. And then another rebounds in the distance. And as you move towards it, it also begins to light up. And you see Hertham. But you know you cannot remember him from your childhood. He died before you could form any real memories of him. You know that what you could remember was vague, but you swear from the stories that Cyril has told you that you know that looking upon Hertham in front of you, this was what he looked like. You have not a shadow of doubt in your mind. This was him. Your ripples continue to emanate from where you stand, but suddenly they stop, reflecting from Hertham. He looks at you and smiles gently. You see his mouth move as he says something, but you can't hear what he's saying. But you can see the warmth and the love in his face. Then, light, brighter than the glow that was emanating from each of your family members, erupts in the horizon. Streaks of it rush towards you, and lances of flame lick across the top of the water around you. They circle around your brother, erupting in a pillar of fire. And standing where he was is a creature made of flame and smoke and darkness, with great billowing wings, the light of the hells reflecting in its eyes and horns curling away from its head. It reaches a long, black taloned hand towards you as smoke billows from its arm. You turn to run, but you find that no matter how hard you try, you cannot move any further from it. You swear you can hear a hollow, deep laughter from its chest as it reaches towards you. And just before its claws can reach you, there's a ringing sound like a bell being struck. And a blinding light cuts through it. Its form dissipates as it bellows in anguish.
No.
And stood behind it is your mother, holding the sword that she gave you that day. She looks you dead in the eye and says, "Make us proud." And you awaken. You just drew the flames card. You continue on your journey. You wander from place to place looking for things to do, meeting new people and just generally learning about the world around you. You've spent plenty of time reading about the different cities and towns as part of your lessons you were taught about the continent of Verlian, but it's a different thing to see it in person. While in a small village to the east, you spot a flyer. The flyer reads, "Adventurers wanted. Reports of monster attacks on the rise in the local countryside. Skilled adventurers needed to cull their numbers and find the lair. Reward on completion. Report to Knight's Valor Keep for details." You think to yourself, this might be a good place to start. You ask the locals for direction to Knight's Valor, and you set off to make your way there. Well, that's our third character introduction. I hoped you enjoyed meeting Giuliana, our third new character, and our second new player, Danny. We only have one more character introduction to go, and then we'll be straight into the new season. We hope you've been enjoying these, and we hope you'll stick around to continue this journey with us. Join us again in 2 weeks to meet our final character, Kazisil. But that's it for this week, so we'll see you soon.
Sorry. Your sister's owned me. What the hell? Okay, it's fine.
This was always the plan.
Nightmare. No, I know. Still a shock. I wrote it. It's still a shock.